At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a one. Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where one man shows... Are you okay, Lilia? Sorry, my dog was being dramatic. I had to refill her water bowl. She has one of those like jugs that you drip in, that like it drips into the bowl. I refill it every couple days, but I guess she's been drinking more than usual. You don't care about this. Anyway, welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where one man shows another a movie he can't believe he hasn't seen. I think that's how that goes. Anyway, we're doing something a little different today. Matthew can't make it this week. He's been trying to regroup since the election results, and he already hasn't been feeling well. He actually texted me earlier today that he would have had to cancel anyway because he has a respiratory infection. So rather than like give you guys a statement that we were going to skip a week, I just figured, especially not like this early on the show, I just figured we would try something and I would do like a quick little solo cast. But the movie that we're watching, here's how this is going to go. I'm going to do a quick solo cast where I'm going to watch the movie, and then every like 20, 25 minutes, like whenever feels right, I'm going to pause the movie and just give you some like in the moment thoughts. The movie we're watching today is the Showtime documentary, The One and Only Dick Gregory, because it has been in my like watch list for at this point going on 2 years. And I don't know a lot about Dick Gregory. I've listened to some of his speeches. I have listened to a couple of his stand-up clips online. I own his book, Political Primer. I have started it. I have not finished it. So I know a little bit about him. I know he was like a political activist and a stand-up comedian in the civil rights movement. And, honestly, that felt appropriate for this time. I'm going to be real with you. I'm not super happy about the election results. I'm really angry, really disappointed, and honestly, more than a little scared. I don't know. Geneva is Korean and Jewish, and so like even if the threat to democracy doesn't actually happen, hate crimes were on a rise during his last tenure, and I am not looking forward to it. So I am choosing to seek solace in someone who has lived through it and is much smarter than me, and can hopefully shed, if not hope, at least provide some answers on what to do next. I'm going to start the movie now. All right, first pause. We're about 20 minutes in. The documentary has faded to black. It said he was in Chicago, and he said something about, and then a girl walked in, and then it faded to black. I don't know a lot about Dick Gregory's like personal life. I assume it's a wife. I don't know. I dig this. It's really well paced. I think the mixture of B-roll and interview and old recordings, I guess, the recordings come from the writing of his autobiography, and they're between Robert Lipset and Dick Gregory just like having conversations, and they're like interspersed with interviews and old clips of him on late night or like other shows. I don't know. I think it works really well. And these last 20 minutes like flew by. This is really well paced. I like this a lot. Even the weird parts, like there's like 20 seconds there in the middle where like Chris Rock compares Gregory to Chappelle, which I don't know enough to make that claim or not make that claim, but I don't know. It just felt weird and out of place. I feel like you could have cut it. It was like 10 seconds. I don't know. Being this is a solo cast, it feels weird to do like a scene by scene breakdown, but like, I don't know. I can get into a little bit, I guess. The first 20 minutes is essentially them talking about how great of a political comedian he was. And they tell a story of how he got on the Jack Parr show because he did the Playboy Club. And it was a Southerners convention. And Hugh Hefner told someone to tell him like he didn't have to perform because they misbooked him, and he just pushed the dude aside and went on and performed, and they have recording of it, and he did well, and he got called by the Jack Parr show and initially said no, but Jack Parr called him directly and was like, yo, why'd you say no? Gregory was like, because black people never sit on the couch. And Jack said, well, you can sit on the couch with me. And his career like skyrocketed after that moment. And then they go into like the basic documentary stuff of early life. How he was born in the Depression and his dad really wasn't around, and he discovered that making people laugh was making people laugh as a defense mechanism. And then it shows like his early days of stand up and how he learned to get funny. And I really like how the interviews are used. Chris Rock is probably him and W. Kamau Bell are I think the two that have been used the most often. We've also seen like Kevin Hart, Wanda Sykes, Lena Waithe. But it seems like so far Chris Rock, and also Dick Gregory's children, his children are used more for like describing of a personal life, and the comedians obviously are used to more describe like his impact on comedy. And it's always cool to see W. Kamau Bell. He's a great interview and I like his work. Overall, the beginning is kind of what I expect. I was not really expecting the fade out. I'm interested to see where this goes. And honestly, I think that is like my initial thoughts is like, it moves really fast. I really like the way that they're cutting. I think it's really smooth how they're cutting everything together. I think Chris Rock and W. Kamau Bell are great, like focus interviews. I think the use of, archive recordings, the autobiography, like recordings, I think that's a great way to like give like narrative flow to the story. Overall, I'm digging this. I'm interested to see where it goes. He's about to, a girl just walked in and, I'm about to find out, what that means. All right. Check back in later. Pause number two. We are 39:38 and it has faded to black again. Basically him meeting his wife and how his wife was his foundation and his rock and essentially his manager, basically ran the entire operation and raised their kids and was just like his ride or die, like truly ride or die. And then the afterwards of that is focused on his early activism. How he started activism when Medgar Evers asked him to go to Mississippi to speak at a voter registration rally, and the two of them became like brothers. Something I've noticed is I don't know if they did this earlier or if it's just because we've had like now a stark cut into different topics, but the different sections of his life, like the different aspects, are different types of interviews. Like his activism, all of the interviews or most of the interviews are other activists. For his personal life stuff, it was his friends or his children or his wife. And then for comedy stuff, it's comedians. I don't know if they did that in the first 20 minutes. I would have to rewatch to find out, but it's a thing I just noticed now. And I think that's a really interesting tool and they don't really bring much attention to it. It makes total sense when you think about it. Honestly, that might be like the only really way to properly tell your story. But it's a really interesting tool that I didn't think that I didn't think about. And then when I noticed it, I was like, oh, that's really clever. W. Kamau Bell is, I think, the only comedian who also was in the activism section. Others were like Harry Belafonte and Merle Evers Williams, who is Medgar Evers' wife and political activist. I want to say she was a chair of the NAACP. I would have to look that up. Honestly, give me 2 seconds. Yes, she was chairwoman of the NAACP. But this section, the activism section, talked about he went to Mississippi and his life was changed at this voters rally. And he saw this is what I have to do. I can make a difference. And he called his wife and was like, yo, if we lose everything and have to go back to pinching pennies again because I have to do what's right, are you okay with that? And she said, yeah, because she's a ride or die. And he went and he like started marching and did political rallies. And he had the sneaking suspicion, apparently, that he was going to get killed at these rallies. Like it said a couple times, like that was just a thing that he felt truly was going to happen. I don't know if, I mean, paranoia is the wrong word because it actually super could have happened. That he just had this thing going on. Like he just had this like horrible feeling that he was going to get killed and how he didn't want his kids raised with hate and how he and Meggers were like fighting for something, but that thing was dangerous. And it actually wasn't he who got killed, but it was Meggers. I actually don't know. I didn't know a lot of this story. I'm pretty sure I said this a thousand times on this podcast already. I went to church school and our history section, especially about the civil rights were spoken of, but they were taught spotty at best. And it is a thing that I actively need to learn to get better as a human being. But I actually did not know the Medgar Evers story. And the doc says that Meggers called Dick Gregory to call his wife. And he asked, and Dick asked what happened. And Meggers couldn't say the words out loud. And when he called his wife, she was just screaming that Richard Jr. had passed. His 2.5-month-old son had just, I didn't pause to read the newspaper section. I think it was, I mean, he was 2.5 months. I think it was SIDS, and, Dick Gregory had to go home. And then the day that he went home to like care for his family after his infant son had passed, Medgar Evers was shot walking to his home. And according to his wife, he died on the steps with the house key in his hands, and that she has like horrible nightmares about that, and that image never leaves you. And it's just, this is a really powerful section of the doc. It's, as a white dude, especially one who has a huge like gap in knowledge of what was happening in this moment, in this moment in time, like learning about just like how dangerous everything was. And I knew it was dangerous. Listen, even in my conservative Ohio school, I was taught that like what they did was dangerous. But until there's like real world references or implications or like a real world image, I don't often, for lack of a better phrase, I don't often think about it as much as I should. And when presented with these images, I am forced to reckon with just how bad things were. And I know we have so much more to do. And yes, there are huge leaps in progress have been made, but honestly, with this current administration, I'm incredibly scared how we're gonna regress. But even so, we have made progress, and I think, I don't know, it just fills me with a desire to do something. But I also know that I'm not the center of the story. Like, I should never be the main character in a person of color story, obviously. I don't know, I'm losing my train of thought, but there was something that he said, that if he were to get killed, to not let his kids be raised with hate, because hate destroys from the inside. And I like that message. It feels very simple and schmaltzy, but also profoundly simple. It's not even that, like, I feel like I'm walking on landmines because I don't. I just feel confused and like kind of shitty that it happened, and obviously, I think I liked that he didn't stop fighting. At least at this point in the story, he didn't give up hope. Like, even though he was devastated, he didn't want hate to run everything. And there's something comforting in that. I don't know. I don't know if I'm making sense. I really like this. I really like this doc so far. I think it's just really technically well made. It plays the emotional moments really well without like them ever feeling, I was gonna say saccharine, but like overblown, I guess. Like, the emotional moments never feel forced, and they never feel like they're there just to be there. Like, they feel very deliberate. Everything about this doc so far feels very deliberate. And these people are so much smarter than me. And I'm just fascinated by what they're having to say. I don't know. I like this doc. On to next 20 minutes. So, pause three, we are an hour and 16 seconds in, and I just realized that this documentary continues to fade to black every 20 minutes, because it aired on TV first. In Showtime, the channel has commercials where Paramount Plus Showtime on streaming does not. So I, this worked out amazing because it just, it gives clear demarcation points, but like I was a stupid and I didn't realize that beforehand. But yeah, this third section was really, more into the civil, his going deeper into activism and civil rights and how that bled into his comedy. He became like really good friends with, MLK and, was arrested over 100 times and beaten by the cops, and, his finances plummeted because he kept giving away all of his money to like, to the cause. In fact, it says in one moment that like, his kids went to private school and someone wrote him a check for his son's tuition, and then he almost immediately gave that check away to Hosea Williams for the cause because Dick Gregory believed what Hosea was doing was more important than his children's education. So this was really, and it was also saying that yes, it was bleeding into his comedy, but he was getting some critics saying that like he was getting angry and less funny, though a lot of people still believed him to be one of the funniest men on the planet. And he began speaking at colleges, where he was like a guest lecturer, and he really liked speaking at colleges because he really liked speaking with like the young educated youth, and he liked indoctrinating them, I guess, like pushing them towards his side. Oh yeah, I see. This is why I didn't keep notes for the first section, which is probably why it feels so scattered, but I've been semi-keeping notes here. It like, there's a moment where it mirrors what happened in Minneapolis in 2020 and what was happening in like Detroit in 1967. And it like does a split screen and like shows, just how similar the riots were and how similar the causes are. And just kind of showing that, like, while progress has been made, we still have so much further to go. And these people are willing to give everything away for the cause. And sorry, I'm back. The lady walked in, and we, like, said hello and shit. She's downstairs now. I just re-listened. They were willing to, like, give everything away from the cause, or from the, for the cause. I think I pretty much established, yeah, I think I basically, he started talking about anti-Vietnam. Him and MLK were staunch opponents to the Vietnam War, and he was, in addition to being arrested over 100 times for protesting and for marching, he was being tapped by the FBI and like surveillanced. And one of his friend or his agent manager, I would have to rewatch, one of his like professional peers, at one point he would call in the middle of the night and whisper that he was calling, and then at one point Dick Gregory would say, "Speak clearly so the FBI can hear you." And so it's just, things were always real, things are like getting real. Something I noticed that's not like super mentioned is he says that he started in 1959. And this is like, and I think at this point we're at like 64, 65. So he's only been doing stand up and like being in the arts for like 5 or 6 years, which means his entire world shifted in like 5 or 6 years, which is like really interesting. I mean, I know 5 years is a generally a long time, but like, it's just, it's really, it's not really mentioned like just how quickly everything happened and how everything changed. There's a quote where he said, I'm going to butcher the quote, but the gist of it is, if you're going to be an agitator, you got to get dirty, and the soap is going to get, and if you try and wash off, if you try and wash off the dirt, the soap is still going to be dirty. Which he's giving everything away. He's giving everything away to this cause because he truly believes in it. And, it's just, it feels condescending as a white dude to say admirable, especially because like I'm not as organized in my community. Like I'm not doing as much as I really could be, and seeing how like someone is truly willing to give their life for something they believe in, like makes me want to do more, but also understanding that it's not about me, but just watching how, this man like gave everything of himself, like financially and physically. I don't want to say admirable because it feels condescending, but I don't know if there is another word off the top of my head. And not to make it about me, but it really just does make me realize how little I'm actually doing. Like, I donate a couple times a year as much as I can. And, I donate money to causes as much as I can a couple times a year. And I try and, like, stay informed, but seeing someone just on the front lines, like, makes me wonder what more I can do, because I know that I believe what I believe, and I believe it very strongly until proven otherwise, but I am also a dumbass, and I'm not going to phrase everything correctly, and I'm probably going to get a lot of the theory wrong. And so I would like to think that I would be a person who would booster the voice, other like smarter people's voices. I don't know. These next 4 years are going to be really scary. And even if most of the rhetoric and policies don't actually go through, in like a major scale way, I do think his rhetoric and, I hate to say vibe, but like the general vibe, it's about to get a lot worse. And seeing someone truly give everything to make a better future for him and his family, it makes me want to do more, and I don't know what I can do, and I would like to know. Because sometimes you got to give up your own comfort for something better for the people you love. And yeah, those are the general takeaways of this section. Not to like make it all about me, though this is a fucking solo podcast where I am talking into a microphone, and this is gonna go out where like 10 people hear it, and I'm so thankful for that. Anyway, I'm gonna shut the fuck up now and watch the next 20 minutes. Yeah. All right, pause number 4. We are an hour 18-ish. Actually, let me... Yeah, hour 18 into this movie. My guess is there's probably going to be 2 more pauses, one at about the 140. Yeah, and then one for the last, like, yeah, one at about, like, 140, and then one for the last 15 minutes. I really like how this documentary, separates its topics very neatly, and how one blends into the other. Like, so this section starts off with MLK being shot, and real world implications of his activism. And then Dick Gregory decides that in order to continue to protest the Vietnam War, he's going to go on a 40-day fast. And so when people ask him, like, why are you doing this, he had the ability to explain his cause. And apparently this is what got him the most media attention he'd ever gotten in that point. And even after the fast, he would, for a long period of time, he was on basically only a water and fruit juice diet. No solid foods. It said he, I would actually have to look up how long it truly lasted, but in the doc, it said that at one point he was on the, he had reached the 14-month point. He did all of this, without, doctors, without, like, involving a doctor, because he thought people don't involve a doctor when you start smoking cigarettes. People don't involve a doctor when you snort cocaine. Like, why would I involve a doctor when I'm trying to, like, make a statement about my with my health? And it said that he went from 288 to 98 pounds by the end. And he didn't, like, consult any doctor until Dr. Fulton had talked to him about, like, truly getting his health together. Like, this is what you're doing right now. I like your cause, but what you're doing right now is not healthy. And especially when, like, you're still smoking cigarettes. And Dr. Fulton convinces him to stop smoking cigarettes and to go vegetarian, and then eventually go, like, full vegan. And he starts promoting a vegan, lifestyle. With changes to his physical health, he needed changes to his environmental health. So he moved the entire family outside of Chicago after his 10th kid. His 10th kid was born. He moved them all to, like, a house in Plymouth, Massachusetts, in the middle of the woods, essentially. And everyone hated it at first, but eventually they all grew to love it. And they appreciated the, like, serene calm of nature and the breathing of the clean air. And he was not only, like, promoted veganism, he was also a strict vegan, like, in his house. And just a strict vegan in his house, and, like, really... Like, his kids would, like, try and hide shit, and when he would catch them, he would, put locks on the fridge and whatnot. And at this point, now that he's moved all of his family into the woods, he's struggling. He's getting all this media attention, and he's on the road more often than he isn't. And it's at this point in his life where he's really struggling to find a balance between being a family man and being an activist and a touring comedian, and doing what he needs to do to support the family and support the cause and being on the road, but also, like, raising his kids. And he didn't really strike a full balance and was gone more often than he wasn't. But he knew that his wife would be able to, like, hold the fort down. He trusted her not only with like his professional, like his professional life, but they were personal partners also, which fucking duh, they're married, but like they were truly like, I'm not codependent. What's interdependent? They were truly interdependent on each other. He seemed far more dependent on her, but she also, the way she talks is that they obviously heavily relied on each other. And when he was on the road, not only do activism shit, but he would like promote a vegan lifestyle or a healthy living lifestyle. And he had these like he called the 4X formula, which were like vitamin powder in that you mix with water, or like pills that were designed to give you as much of the essential nutrients as you can, as they can in like these like food deserty areas. And he would give them away to people in the U.S. and overseas when he was doing, for lack of a better, it's not mission work, but for lack of a better phrase, mission work. And he would team up with all these celebrities like John Lennon and Yoko Ono and Michael Jackson. And he would give these pills out to people who need them to like help like maintain as much of a balanced nutrition as they can possibly get. And he would promote an increase in water intake to like prevent sickness and whatnot. And he was just disgusted with the U.S. government that they could like send tanks over to different countries for war, but they couldn't send. I think the phrase he used was like, they can send tanks, but they can't send turnips. And he was really disgusted that the U.S. would send, essentially cause war overseas, but weren't able to even like help their own people who are food insecure, but also just like with general healthy living. And he predicted the dramatic increase in obesity and diabetes and like heart disease. And he did this he did this long run, like cross-country run from New York to LA, working with a professional trainer to promote, like show how his lifestyle, he can still like do, like he can still do this stuff. And he would raise awareness for like national hunger, and he would feed people along the way. The section ends with his wife saying, and he did all of this on a near total fast, and that was the scary part. And it faded to black. And it's because he was so dedicated to like eating healthy and living healthy, but he was also fasting for the cause and damaging his body. And a couple times it's mentioned that he understood he was damaging his body, but he didn't realize like, one, how long lasting the damage was going to be, but also that it wasn't going to happen right away, that it would happen later in life. And I think that's what this is setting up now, is he's going to start seeing the damage that losing 190 pounds, the destruction of his body, like the destruction of his body is going to cause on him. My initial thoughts on this is, I think this section so far might have been the quickest. Like, I understand it literally was the fastest, I'm pretty sure, at only 18 minutes, but I also feel like it flowed the fastest, and it flowed between its two topics the quickest. Like, I think it's because they already did the first jump from comedy to activism, and they like showed the blending of the two, but like in how he arrived there, but so that they didn't need to do a whole lot more of the explanation when it was from activism to healthy life promoting, because not only like was that a different form of activism, but that bled Like that really bled because he started the healthy life promoting during the activism and as a form of protest against the Vietnam War. And like on a personal level, I'm not sure. I know obviously like drinking, I drink like 3 liters of water a day. But like, I obviously increasing water intake and like more veggies and less red meats and shit are super healthy. I think it's really interesting in that I'm not criticizing, but I think it's really interesting to promote some kind of healthy lifestyle food wise when you're actively not eating and doing active and passive damage to your body. I just think this is it's a really interesting paradox because they went like fairly in depth with like the fact that the 4X formula exists, and like he eventually did get involved with like a trainer and a doctor to like figure out how to make everything work. But I find it really intriguing how these two things can coexist in the same person, in the same message, and like both be right and kind of both be wrong. Like, I think he took I know nothing obviously, but just from what they have shown in this documentary, and also I'm gonna be blunt with y'all, I'm like 310. I am way fatter than I should be. I should actively like be working out more and eating healthier. Like, I am not one to talk when it comes to like healthy eating and shit, but I think what he did was incredible, or at least what they're saying through the documentary that he did was incredible. I do find some pushback in how strict it was, especially when like obviously healthy eating is important, and like I'm also stupid, so like, and I'm not the one. Yeah, I just think a 14th month, over a year long fast, and then switching to absolutely the cleanest, healthiest ever, with no like real, seemingly no real margin for error, is a lot. But also, like, I'm not judging how he lived his life. It obviously it worked for him until it didn't. I think what strikes me most about this is that he's taking this as serious. I mean, obviously, but he's taking this as seriously as his other activism and as his other is like his comedy. And I think it seems to me that this man's brain can either be at 0 or 100. I work with that on some things, but it even mentioned that he failed to strike a balance between his personal and professional life. Like they mentioned that specifically in also like with raising children, but also just like as a person. And I think overall his message is really good. I just think leaving little margin for error can only doom someone. Either when they fail or if they do succeed forever. This documentary is already prepping for some impending health disaster. And I think his overall message is good, and I think he did really good things with giving nutritional vitamins and like promoting healthy eating and more drinking water to impoverished people. I don't know. I'm finding some pushback with the 0 or 100 mentality. But also, like, again, I'm 310 and not living as healthily as I should be. So, like, who am I to fucking judge? But yeah, one of my main takeaways right now is just how fascinating, interesting. I need more adjectives, but just how I love seeing how this guy's brain works and his dedication to something, even when that thing ultimately destroys him, maybe, or I mean, in some ways destroys him, but also like affects the people around him. And it doesn't show whether or not he fully understood that. But I love watching how this guy's brain works and how he is so dedicated to something. I guess that's my main takeaway with this section. Next one. Here we go. All right, new pause. Actually, I stand corrected. I said at the last pause that was the shortest section at 18 minutes. So far, this is the shortest one at 11 minutes, and we have 23 left, which makes me think either it's all going to be like one long thing, or it's going to be another like 15 to 18 and then like a little epilogue and then credits. Like it's going to be, and then fade and then epilogue and credits. I don't know yet. This one is, being the shortest, they kind of just needed to get all of the information out at once. Like there wasn't as much room to breathe. And so they just kind of were just like, this happened, then this happened, then this happened. And here's how this was all related. We came back. He was still doing the runs, he was still doing the New York to LA run, and it was causing him like great pain. He was getting, fatigued and blisters everywhere. But he kept persisting, just saying, let's go to work. He got to Mexico and then realized, he became worried that there was a lack of press coverage. And so he called up Muhammad Ali and got him involved. And Ali promoted him during a fight and then eventually joined him for a little bit on the run. And he ended up doing like multiple runs as a form of protest for multiple different causes. And he would like blend his health promotion with activism. And that bled into like his stand-up being like a lack of entertainment gigs. And then at age 40, he stopped doing nightclub gigs and he dove deeper into health awareness and activism. And he started selling his 4X formula as the Bahamian diet, which was marketed as like a multi-level marketing and mainly pushed to poor black areas because W. Kamau Bell said that like a white people diet culture is generally from other white people, and Dick Gregory wanted to have something like that for black people where they can help care for each other like they're going to do it themselves. This led to a working relationship with a man named Walter Hudson, who was over 1,000 pounds, and there was a news story that he tripped and fell and then was stuck fell and got stuck in the doorway and required a ton of paramedics to get him out. And this got Dick Gregory's attention, and he started working with him with the Bahamian diet. And Walter lost 300 pounds in 3 months, but refused to leave his house to go to the facility because Walter thinks he wanted to focus more on his diet, while Dick Gregory was like, no, you have that under control. Please come with me so we can like fully get you into like aqua therapy and stuff. And Walter refused, and so Dick walked away, and Walter was like, I'm going to stick to this, I promise, like, you'll see. And then 2 years later, Walter Hudson passed away, and Dick Gregory was upset because he really thought that he could help him, and that is the fade out. My thoughts on this are very similar to the last one, where he truly just has an all or nothing mentality. I do like him trying to help his own community, like marketing it to our own community. Like, yes, he's doing it as a business plan and he's making money off of it, which, like, hell yeah, pay your bills, girl boss. But, like, it feels very, like, it feels like he definitely, like, this section and the Bahamian diet feels less activism-y and more like, yes, I'm making money off this, but also, like, I genuinely just want to help. And I like that. Is I don't really have a lot of thoughts on this section. This was, like, very, like, fact, all in a row, and didn't really, like, blend, or, like, didn't really leave much room for to breathe. It is probably, so far, my least favorite, like, of the, like, divided sections, but also, that might just be because it's the shortest, and I wanted not even more information. I think we got all of the information. I just wish I had, I wish there were more, like, I guess I wanted more interviews. I don't know what I wanted. I just wanted, like, more of this, because this, like, it's very well done, but it feels very tight, and I kind of wanted, the rest feel deliberate, but they also have these moments where they can, like, be looser and allow more opinion, and this one just felt very informative, and I would have liked for there to, like, it had a couple, like, second minutes of it, but I would have liked to see more expansion on the effect that his diet had, unless that his diet existed, if that makes sense. But, like, it's really well done. It's solidly put together. I'm really enjoying this doc. I don't really have a lot of thoughts on this section other than that. So, yeah. See you at next pause. New pause. The new shortest section. It was like 9 minutes. And honestly, these last two sections should have been combined into one. Is my big critique at the moment. Both of them work well, but the beginning of this expands more on the idea set up in the last section in a way that I wish the last section did, which I'm sure that they did. They separated this into two sections for another commercial break for, like, advertising reasons. But on a storytelling structural level, I wish this was all one 20-minute chunk. This one section begins with Dick Gregory opened up his health resort in the Bahamas, where people would go, and he would, like, have a real, like, group workout plan and group diet, and they would, like, weigh in and actively try and get healthier and just, like, promote fitness and activity and healthy eating. He sold his Bahamian diet rights for $30 million, and there was no, like, real backlash of this civil rights leader, borderline socialist, like, making money, because it was just, like, it was really amazing for a black man, especially at that time, to be able to be making the money that he was. And he always put put as much as he could back into his community. And he had, like, very little attachment to the money. because he used it all for causes, and that led him to not really like keep an eye on how shit was being spent, and this was upsetting his like executive business partners, and everyone ended up suing, and the resort closed, and about $200 million was ended up tied up in court, and Dick Gregory had to file for bankruptcy, where his home was taken away, his home and farm was taken away, everything moved to a storage unit, but. And as much as the as much as this period of his life was like terrible, he couldn't afford health insurance for his family. It was bad. His daughter said that she doesn't think that he minded it as much as he minded had he like lost his influence in activism, and that started to wane. He wasn't as visible as he was in his early days as he was getting older. And this section ends with him talking about a time where he was in an empty auditorium and he just did his entire act to no one, to zero people. And it was painful because like there was no silence. He couldn't have a rhythm. And it was at that moment like he realized that his influence or his weight, like his trajectory was waning, and that was upsetting him more than the actual loss of money, though I'm sure the loss of money was not fun either. Yeah, I don't really have a lot of thoughts on this one either. Like, this very much just feels like a not even a part two. Like, it feels connected to the last section that I know it's for commercial and advertising reasons, and it's just different enough that it's like, oh, him as health, like health, starting his business and then becoming like an entrepreneur in the fall of his business. Though I really think that this works better as one whole complete piece. Like this expanded on the first half in a way that I wish the first half did. And, we're now gearing towards the end and we're starting to do like we've now like ended the second act officially, I think, like as far as like three act story structure goes, I guess. Like the first part of him being a comedian and then starting activism, his through activism, through becoming a health person, through becoming a businessman, through him losing it all is act two. And so I'm very interested to see where act three goes from here. Honestly, based on the length of the last two, I don't know how many more pauses there are going to be. I don't even hope for a specific number, but yeah, I'm interested to see how they wrap all this up. We're at the point in the story. I mean, it's a human life, obviously, but in like the narrative of the documentary, we're at the point in the story of, we are now like gearing up toward the end, and I want to see how they pull this all together. Anyway, yeah, those are my thoughts. All right, we're at the end. Our last section ended with his influence waning, and this section begins with him becoming more of a legacy figure, and Rob Schneider meeting him at the host of Hugh Hefner, then hiring him for the hot chick, which was able to give Dick Gregory health insurance. And Rob hadn't realized, because he was such a legacy figure, that he had so little money that he didn't have health insurance. And Dick Gregory was diagnosed with early onset dementia. And according to his son, this was the period in his life where he actually, for the first time, truly saw his father get angry at people. And it interviewed like his former assistants and his the younger class of comedians who he would try and mentor, like Chris Rock, Kevin Hart, Dave Chappelle. And they would all say, like, he would like scream at them and cuss them out, and he would fire his assistant, then hire them, in the same sentence. But like, he would cuss out the younger generation and give them advice, like, but in a very harsh way. But none of them really took it personally, because they understood that that was just the way he was talking, and that it came from a place of genuine good intention of wanting to help people. And this anger gave him a newfound, like, raw energy, and he got back into stand-up and started doing clubs again and started touring. And he would do these long sets and then continue to do meet and greets, which couldn't have been good on his health. And he would just speak with, like, reckless abandon but very pointed targets. And he was finally at an age where he could speak freely. And I want to say it was either Chris Rock or W. Kamau Bell who said, like, people think that Dick Gregory was an activist who had to get funny, but he was always a comedian at his core. And he was back on the road and he started doing shows again, and he died with dates on the books. And a week before he died, he was complaining of that he didn't feel well, and his son took him to the hospital. They canceled a gig and they thought that it was a simple UTI, but the hospital diagnosed it as an issue with his blood vessels and that he wasn't going to live long. And he passed a couple days later. And his family was saying that he gave a little wink and that the look on his face was so peaceful that he gave everything he could. He did everything that he thought was necessary. He accomplished all that he could and he was ready to go. And the last little and then it, like, fades to black, but I decided not to pause because it very much, I felt like that it would normally have faded to black even if this wasn't for commercial break. And I figured the next, 4 to 5 minutes was going to be pretty quick and attached. And all the comedians and activists and family contemplating his legacy about how, like, he shook the establishment and did so many different things in so many different fields, and he fought and he sacrificed himself and he set the bar higher. And Chris Rock said that Dick Gregory taught him that to just try it, to there's a Kevin Smith quote, to live a why not life. And I feel like this is very similar, that, like, just try it, try comedy, try losing weight, try living a better life for you and your family and the world around you. Just try to leave the world better than you left it, than you came, like, try to leave the world better than you came into it. And Wanda Sykes said that Dick Gregory taught her to aim higher, that if you're going to throw something, make sure you aim higher than you think you can hit. And it ends with an interview clip of Dick Gregory where he says, I ain't going to leave America till she straighten out, and I'm not going to love it till she becomes lovable, and then I'm getting the fuck out of here. And I feel like, at least in the narrative of the documentary, that is what happened. This last act was probably my favorite part. I feel like it wrapped everything up together. It had, like, a little, there was like a third act of a life, and there was like a little boost at the end, but it managed to, like, wrap all of the other parts together, and, like, tie the story up in a nice bow. And that's probably my thoughts on it structurally. As far as, like, final thoughts on the documentary as a whole, I went into this kind of wanting, answers is the wrong term, but something akin to answers of how to deal with my feelings towards, like, the results of this last election and the fear that it brings me and my family, I didn't get answers, but I did get, like, an idea of a sense of hope, because this, I don't know, not to make it all about me again, but this is kind of, I'm speaking into a microphone on a podcast that I co-host at this point, regular hosting, and this dude lived a life harder than I can ever live, and that many people think that we're about to go if not directly back to closer than we would want to go back closer to that period than we want. And he says that don't let a world be don't live a world life of hate. And he didn't care when he didn't have money. And he just, even when shit was hard and he was actively doing shit, it felt like he felt like there was a purpose and he had hope. And it doesn't so much give me hope or purpose, but it does let me know, like, someone has lived through this before and we're probably not going to be back there again. But if we are, they've lived through this before. A way can be figured out to live through it again. That sounds shitty, but I don't know what the next 4 years or the future after that brings. This documentary didn't really give me answers, nor did I expect it to. It was just really, it was nice to see someone else's story to go through a specific period of time and come out the end of it better. I'm not entirely sure what I'm saying here. But I guess it's kind of, to be alive is to suffer. And he lived a life and I want to live a life to help ease the suffering of others and the people he loved and not cause more suffering. And I'm still scared and I'm still angry. I think it was just nice to watch the story of someone who did make a difference. I didn't know a lot about Dick Gregory going in. I had passing knowledge, and I feel like I know more now. And I feel like I understand why he's such a staple in... He's still such a staple to many in the political and comedic realm. And I want to read Political Primer, and I just want more of this dude, because not that it's other people's job to give me hope, but I kind of left this being like, okay, even when things are dark and shitty and scary and just awful, you can still ease the suffering of someone. You can still leave the world a better place than you found it. And yeah, it's a documentary about a person. You're going to get a little bit of hero worship, especially toward the end. And you're going to get manipulated into thinking someone was maybe more or less important than they are presented. And I don't know. But it's just nice. It's just nice to know that you don't have to give up and you can keep fighting. I guess those are my thoughts on the documentary. I don't know why. There's a Gerard Way quote in the last couple days that have been going through my head, where he was at a My Chem concert and they were screaming into the crowd, "In the face of extermination, scream fuck you." And that's not exactly the vibe I got from this, but it's not dissimilar, if that makes sense. But yeah, those are my final thoughts. I guess while we're here, we can make statements for, I would like to think at this point you would kind of know our current politics, but like, if you don't, it's, fuck fascism and, it's so basic. I shouldn't have to say that, but fuck fascism. And, Matthew probably has more words to go on a deeper diatribe and to more fully explain, but fuck fascism. And my general philosophy in life is to be alive is to suffer. So why would I want to cause more suffering on someone else when I could choose to ease it? And yeah, I guess those are my final thoughts. This movie ruled. I liked it a lot. It probably won't be a regular rewatch, but I will probably, I'm definitely going to recommend this, at least to my comedian friends. But yeah, I highly recommend it. But yeah, I'm scared. I'm angry. And this didn't like make me less scared or less angry, but it did provide some level of focus, I guess. Like, we got shit to do. Anyway, that's the show. So long and good night.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.